hope you came ready to fight, because that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Conflict. Yeah, I want to get a little distance. Make sure that the scrum happens before I can escape. So, okay, am I muffled or muddy? Probably the mic's down there. Is that any better? Okay. I wanted to, to review a little bit from last week. We discussed a principle last week that basically went something like this, that all marriages tend towards disconnection. So when we first come together as a couple, probably remember some of those days, there's a supercharge of energy, right, in our relationship. Everything comes easy. The thing that we're fighting hardest usually is not to overheat, because we can hardly stay apart long enough to concentrate on anything else, and so there's this magnetic pull towards each other. You get into the day-to-day of marriage over time, and all kinds of things start to come in that are normal and good things, but they do encroach on the energy that you can invest in your relationship. So exhibit A would be our kids, work, the pressures of life, the wounds that start to pile up a little bit and just cause us to carry some of that around in us. And what happens over time is that we are mobilizing as a couple, as we should, to take care of the tasks, in our lives, the things that have to be done in our lives. But if we're not careful, we're not reinvesting energy in our intimacy, in our closeness. And so the research shows, and, it just bears out over and over again, that you are much more likely to die. Your marriage is much more less likely to die from overheating as it is from freezing to death. So you just grow apart. And so we have to be very intentional, we talked about last week, about valuing our oneness, investing in our relationship, knowing what feeds our marriages, and not assuming that just because we're doing our roles well in terms of just mobilizing for the task at hand, that we are growing in our closeness, or that we're staying close. That was the point. And so I really left you guys with the question, what are you doing in your kind of your weekly rhythms to feed your closeness? One of the questions that you can kind of see a track record on this too is sometimes, what have you stopped doing that used to bring energy to your relationship? And then invited you guys to have a conversation about anything that the Lord would want you to start, okay, to invest really in the closeness of your relationship, all right? Any comments sort of on that, or things that you guys have thought about this week, that those of you who are here? Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to have states of the union conversation all the time. So what do you like?
Yeah.
Premarital, this is almost a pointless. I don't bring this up in premarital because they won't believe. Huh? The question was, what do you do if you're on the front end of the cooling off process? You have a lot of energy now. Seems like bringing it up does one of two things. One, you think you're the exception to that rule, right? Because, chemistry, man, we had it. So there was just no way I was going there. I wouldn't have believed you. So might be a developmental thing in a relationship. Like, it may not be the time to learn that lesson. Secondly, to bring it up could be a deadening thing, as Luke said. Yeah, it was kind of a downer. Like, honey, what we have is so good, but it's not going to last. Let's go there for a little while, that probably wouldn't be cool. I tell you one thing that someone told me a little bit earlier into my marriage, though, when we weren't cooled off, we weren't fighting this hard, but we hadn't brought in, the kids hadn't been added to the equation. they said to keep, this guy said, write down the things that you do together that bring you energy, that you really enjoy. And I'm like, how stupid is that? I mean, why, everybody knows what they like. I mean, you gravitate to it. He said, no, write it down. You'll come to a point in your marriage where you'll need to remember and you'll have forgotten. And I didn't do it because I just didn't believe. But literally, after kids come in and you mobilize so intensely, I mean, it changes all your rhythms, your sleep patterns, your, I mean, just everything. You're watching, you're, sometimes even your reserves, your emotional reserves, and so you start to go to places in tones and in ways that you probably wouldn't have if you had had sleep, for example, or whatever else, but nevertheless, you start to wound each other, and you get irritated as all get out sometimes at each other for not performing the way you hoped, or going long stretches without your needs being met, so it makes you a little, I call it seething resentment. Well, that's another topic, but anyways, you'll need to recover. What I'm saying is there's points at which you really need to recover some of that. So what I would recommend, stupid as it sounds, is while it's good, take note. You know, take note of what it is that feeds you, because that will help you sometimes. I mean, here's a simple example of how I see this being powerful. When I was a therapist, you'd have couples come in, you know, and they are just, I mean, obviously, a lot of times by the time they end up in your office, they've tried repeatedly to solve it themselves, and they're ticked beyond belief, right? So they are not each other's favorite people when they walk in. And so they want to come in, and they come in with pages, some of them, of, they've prepared their statements, like almost like a law case. You know, so as a therapist, you go, so what's going on? You know, and so you're going, whoa, you know. So one of the things that I would often ask, this is where I started to discover some of this, is that I would say, hey, before we get, I know there's going to be a lot of stuff that's important that brought you here. I need a little history on your relationship. Tell me a few of the things that drew you together. Tell me why you were attracted to this guy or this girl in the first place. Tell me a little bit of the story of your relationship. Tell me two or three of the things that drew you to this person. So they're like, well, I can't remember, you know, or whatever. Well, just think about it a second. Well, then all of a sudden you see these little smirks coming on. Well, I remember this, and they start to tell you a story. And before long, the body posture is changing, the temperature is going down a little bit, you know, and you know it hasn't. We haven't even started on the issues, but just remembering, you know, some of the good things. Brings back some resources into that relationship, and certainly if you could imagine what it would look like to begin to just reinvest in some of the good things. So instead of having just a problem-focused lens, you have an intimacy or closeness-focused approach can be very, very useful. All right. Any other comments? Just questions on that, and then if not, we'll hit our next. Okay, this video, I got to set this up for you. Are we ready to go on that video, Jared? Okay. This video is a little dumb, I will tell you this, but it does get me where I want to go. So here we go.
Where do you want this stuff?
What stuff?
Oh, these old posters. It's junk. You said you'd put it away a week ago.
That's not junk, Marcia. Those are antiques. Who says I want them out here?
Well, I don't want them in the laundry room anymore. I'm sick and tired of tripping over them all the time.
Well, just stick them over there in the corner somewhere, and I'll carve out a spot for them later.
Well, Jody called. She wants me to come in for a couple of hours. That new girl she hired is sick.
Ouch. Can you have me that 916? Please? Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for the answer.
What answer? You didn't ask me a question.
You didn't say anything about my having to go into work.
That's not a question, Marcia. That's a comment. There's a difference. 9/16.
Well, anyway, I won't be here when Uncle Bud drops Mom off at 5:00. So, can you be here?
No. I'm playing golf with Cunningham, remember?
Yeah, I remember. But do you think you can be home by 5?
I doubt it. We're going to be playing 18 holes. We're going to start at 2:30. We'll be lucky to finish by 6:30.
What about Mom?
Well, maybe your mom would like to walk the back nine with us.
Oh, very funny. Maybe you could just tow her behind the cart in her wheelchair.
What am I supposed to do? Tell my boss to bug off? Go play by yourself?
Yeah, right. Bug off's the word that I'd use. How about something important came up that needs my attention?
Your mom's a loony, Marsh. She belongs in a padded cell. And I resent you always making me the babysitter.
That's rude. That is really, really rude. Can you blame her for wanting to get out of the nursing home and spend a little bit of time with her family?
Wait a minute. The last time we had this argument, that thing eventually went off, and it took a week to clean up the mess. I can do this.
I told you it was dumb. Okay, so unpack this for a second, though. What was going on here? What did you? Some of the things you observed with this couple and their little argument.
The gentleman was more interested in the car than he was with what his wife was saying.
Yeah, he was a little preoccupied, wasn't he? Yeah.
Talking at each other rather than to each other.
Right. Right. Yeah. What else?
Fundamental difference between the way a man thinks and the way a woman thinks. It was very evident.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely some different perspectives in play, right?
The guy can defuse a bomb with a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, that's right. It's right. All you need for a successful marriage is a Swiss Army knife.
And a can of beer.
Yeah, and a can of beer.
Cola. Cola.
It was cola.
Okay. Okay, it was cola. What else?
She
kind of
kept coming in the back door with what she wanted, not really communicating clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they had a little rhythm. I mean, they were getting their points in there, and as it heated up, you know, some of it was a little sarcasm, a little whatever, and it pushed the buttons, right? As the buttons were pushed, what did you notice?
They knew exactly where the buttons were.
Yeah, they knew it. They know it. They know it, yeah.
They were using buttons from an old panel. They weren't even relevant to what they were discussing.
Yeah. The thing that I wanted you to notice in there, which I'm sure you did, is just the nature of escalation, right, in conflict. So, you know, they were visualizing it there with dynamite. They were throwing back and forth. But, you know, basically there was, started kind of down here emotionally tone, and they, you know, one went this way, one went the other way. It's kind of this tit for tat, you know, kind of thing that got more intense and eventually got out of control. Now, also, this was a place that they have been before, right? This is a conversation they've had before. This was a repetitive cycle, really, of an area where they were stuck in their conflict. Now, nobody raised their hand, but are you going there right now in your mind, in your marriages? I mean, there are places. I mean, generally we have conflict, but we also have places of pockets of conflict. So that there is somewhat of a predictable, usually, you know, pattern to the way that we fight. Sometimes on the topic matters, you know, that we fight on. I know two or three places, Ralph. Hand and we visit them at least once this week, in my marriage, where you know we're generally rational in most things, but on those particular topics, you know we just lose it, and it's a very very painful, difficult, you know, kind of conversation for us. Now, everybody tends to have a preferred style with their conflict. So, you know, maybe a classic one that you would think of would be the under conflict. I'm a pursuer. I'm more the one that likes to take conflict head on, you know. And I don't know if maybe you're like that. Anybody like that here, where conflict you prefer to confront? If things escalate, you'll be the one that more tends to bring up the matter. You want to deal with it. How many people would say I'm kind of more that way? Some people under duress or conflict do what? You know, the exact opposite, right? So, you know, for whatever reason, you hate it. You tend to, your worst nightmare is to, you know, to have, you know, the altercation. And the way that you tend to handle conflict is to, you know, maybe be quiet or to withdraw. Okay? And sometimes your withdrawal lasts the way you communicate. I mean, you're effective still at communicating your displeasure, but it's just over 2 or 3 days, maybe, okay, once you're irritated, because you'll back off. Okay, so pursue withdrawal. Now when you get, by the way, people tend to get together who have complementary weaknesses or strengths. Are you going to say that? So a lot of times what you'll see in a relationship is there's somebody who sort of has the role of bringing up the issues, and then somebody who their job is to avoid it or to keep the peace. That would be a better way to say it. It's to keep the peace, the stability in the relationship. Now, but that's not always the case. You can have all kinds of combinations of this. So, for example, Deborah and I are both, we are both pursuers. We are both verbal. When we are under stress, both of us elevate. Okay, so our house is a very fun place. It's a little dangerous, I gotta admit that. But we tend to really, you know, and in the early days of our marriage, it was more dangerous than fun, okay? Because we were just, I mean, that's just sort of how, that was our tendency. Now, if you have two withdrawers in a relationship, or two people who really value the peace, it's less dangerous, but it can be very, very chilly. Now, I'm serious. My stepfather, my mom is a, you know, but his first marriage, the way he describes his wife was that she was a big-time withdrawer, and he is a withdrawer. So I said, well, how did you guys do conflict? He said, no, it was routine to have days and sometimes weeks where we didn't speak. I mean, we kind of went on our business. And I said, well, would you eventually come back to the topic? Not necessarily. We would just eventually, both of us would just sort of get over it, and we would go on. But sometimes you can have that dynamic in a relationship where literally the peace is so valued, or whatever, harmony is so valued, that the only way you know how to handle conflict or disagreement is by distance. Okay? Probably most commonly, I was mentioning, is this idea that you sometimes have a little bit of both, a pursuer and a withdrawer. Now, if you were to guess, I mean, this is just some general things. If you were to guess in a relationship, stereotypically, who generally has the pursuer role and who has the withdrawer role in relationships? I'm just saying in conflict. Who tends to bring up problems in the relationship, a man or a woman? Tends to be, I mean, this is not, if you don't fit this stereotype, fine, but generally speaking, the women tend to bring up problems in the relationship. Men, as long as they're getting fed and having sex, usually are content, okay, with the status quo. I'm sorry, but this is the way it works. So 80% of the time in like my practice, the person who makes the appointment for the therapy session is the wife, yeah. And then they come in, I say, where's your husband? And they say, well, he would never come to this. I've been trying to get him to deal with this for years. And I'd say, and so she wants to tell me about that. I say, well, let's call him. You know, maybe he'd come in, you know. No, he would never come. Let's just call him, you know. So we get on the phone and dial him up and, you know, whatever. And I say, hey, you know, your wife's in here. She's got interesting things to say about, you know, you and your relationship. I just wondered if you wanted to come in and share your side of the story. He's like, where are you? You know, I'm going. He comes in, you know. So we get, but that's generally the pattern, right? Of in relationships. Now, men, when you talk to them, then tend to say something like this: my wife is always nagging me, right? I mean, she will not shut up. Can she never be content with, you know, I'm doing some stuff here. I don't get any credit, you know. And the woman tends to say what? He's always avoiding this. He's more interested in his work or his, because every time they get into this, the guy is what? Off, he's out the door. I mean, it's like, if you want to be like this, you know, I can get respect somewhere else. You know, so this tends to be the stereotypical pattern. If you don't fit that, just tangle it around. I don't necessarily fit that profile. I've always been a little more like the woman than the guy in all the little studies. So, you know, I've come to terms with that. So it's okay. So if you don't fit it, that's fine. Now, here's the reality. However, both men and women, in their heart of hearts, genuinely care about their relationship. Nobody that's together, when you peel off the layers, says I want to have a bad relationship. Right? I want to have a conflicted, unreconciled, unhappy relationship. Both men and women, despite their different tendencies, or yours, in your marriage, you both care at some level about your relationship. You want it to be all that it can be, right? Generally what is happening is that both of you in your messed up ways are fighting for the good of your relationship, even in your worst moments. So in the moments where the pursuer is, using tactics that, you know, maybe are harmful, but still pushing into the conflict, they're basically saying, we've got to get this dealt with because I care about this relationship, right? We can't leave these things unresolved. The person who's running away or whatever, you know, in it, or would prefer to avoid it, is going, we can't, if we keep going to these places, I'm going to say and do things that are even more destructive to this relationship, right? I want to cool this down because why? I care about this. I don't want to have a relationship where we're just always fighting. I want to have some good things. So in our own sick ways, right? Generally speaking, even when you're stuck in crazy cycles of conflict, both parties are trying to express something that usually we're missing, that I care about this relationship, and both dealing with problems and also harmony are important in our relationship. Okay. Now, let me, with that kind of setup, let me take you to a passage of scripture in 1 Peter. If you have your text or you can open up there or not, I'll just read it to you. It's 1 Peter 3, verse 9. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. All right, let me read that again. Do not repay evil for evil or insult for insult, but with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. I have discovered over the years of my marriage that verse has a lot of insight, has a lot of really key instruction to this whole subject of marital conflict. Most of us, in various ways, get stuck in the crazy cycle of conflict. You know, whether we are, you know, the ones that overheat or withdrawal or a combination of the two, we're stuck in something. I mean, have you ever stepped back from a dispute that you've had with your spouse that has escalated and gone south, and you've ended up back in that place that you've been 1,000 times before, and you're feeling hurt and disappointed, and you say to yourself, how do we always end up here? Why is it like this? What went wrong? It almost seemed at times to me, anyways, that the conflict, the dynamic of conflict in my marriage has a life of its own. That it's something that is almost attacking us, and no matter how hard we try in our various ways, we can't seem to get out of this, the thing that we're stuck in. It has an emotional energy to it that sometimes defies our best attempts at analysis. And what's really happening in that, and whatever the shape of that conflict looks like, is that what really is driving that conflict, you know, is the retaliation, the retaliatory spirit, that one is, it's sort of a reactionism, you know, back and forth. And instead of coming at things where you're on the same team, this repaying of insult for insult, evil for evil, begins to take over, and you know, we're in the middle of the messes that we're in. So the question that I want to ask is, and try to answer this morning, is how do you approach your conflict, wherever you find yourself this morning, in a way that that will diffuse some of the crazy cycle of conflict that we get into, and can introduce new ways of approaching each other that hopefully, you know, would be helpful. Okay, now. There's a marriage researcher. I think he's the best in the country. His name is John Gottman. He's not a therapist. In fact, he kind of is suspicious at some level of a therapist because he thinks they're too subjective, right? He thinks all this theories of whatever, how they work. He didn't know if they had enough objectiveness in that. So what he did with his career was that he has spent about 35 or 40 years videotaping couples communicating and fighting. Okay, and he has broken that video down frame by frame, you know, down to milliseconds, to see if there were any patterns that he could predictably see, objectively see, that are a part of couples that are destructive in the way that they fight, and couples who do better, okay, in the way that they fight. And what he found after years and years of research is that there are some predictable patterns, right? Let me start with the destructive patterns first, because I know you're dying to know, right? This is what he found in couples who don't do their conflict well. By the way, before I say this, this is how crazy good he got at this, how predictable this pattern was. He can watch a couple fight for, I think it's about 90 seconds, and predict with about 85% accuracy whether that couple will divorce or not within the next 7 years. Really, really crazy. This is how predictable and how powerful these dynamics are. Okay, and he found when he broke this video down that there were four factors. That were so deadly, so toxic, so destructive, four behaviors in a relationship, that he nicknamed them the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Okay, so in other words, these are marriage killers from the tape. Okay, when couples are interacting about conflict, small and large, not just big things, just kind of woven into the pattern of the way they communicate, okay, with each other. The first one is this. Criticism. So when he saw couples as they were interacting that had a pattern of criticism in their relationship, that was a predictable red flag. Now, he distinguishes the difference between a complaint and what he's going to call criticism. So in other words, you might think, well, wait a second. If I bring up anything negative in my relationship, you know, I'm killing it. No, absolutely not. Okay, that's not what he's saying. There is a difference between a complaint, so something that you bring to your partner that is a behavior you want to see changed, or something that needs to be changed for the good of your relationship, and a criticism. And here's the difference. Criticism attacks character or personality. And a complaint addresses a specific behavior. So here would be an example. You get up one morning for work, you're running late, your wife does the say, goes out, jumps in the car after all the things that she's done with the kids that morning, and there's no gas in the car. Okay, it's running on fumes. And Jerko husband told her yesterday that he would put gas in the car. Okay, so she is understandably under stress. She's upset. Okay, he has said something that he hasn't followed through on, and she is mad. Now, a criticism would say something like this: "You're always so irresponsible. You never do anything you say." Okay. Now, do you see how that attacked his character and his personality? A complaint would say something like this: honey, there's no gas in the car. Didn't you tell me that you're going to fill it up? Okay, that's sticking to the behavior rather than attacking the personality. Do you hear the difference? So when you fall into patterns in your conflict where you go when you're angry is to attack the personhood, the character, the personality of your partner rather than sticking to the content of the things that you're wanting to bring up. According to Gottman, you've unleashed a deadly force. You are insulting. You're returning insult for insult. You're repaying evil for evil. You're not being constructive, okay, in your relationship. Okay, here's the second of the marriage killers. And by the way, he said this was the most toxic. Okay, and he called it contempt. Contempt. Contempt is responding to your spouse with sarcasm, name-calling, mockery, eye-rolling, the perfectly placed sigh, you know, that communicates without saying a word that you are scum of the earth. You know what I'm talking about here. Don't be looking at me like that. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, we have our ways, don't we, of communicating to our partner, even non-verbally, our disdain, our more than just our unhappiness with the whatever, but with our absolute resentment, you know, sort of them, and our disgust. What he basically discovered is that evidences of disgust that are not checked, you know, in relationship are absolutely poison to the spirit of your marriage. So, again, we're talking about how to fight. These are tactics in fighting that really are unfair and destructive. Okay? This is repaying, I believe this is what Peter means when he says, don't repay evil for evil or insult, you know, for insult. This will kill your marriage. Now, listen, I thought sarcasm was an art form. I mean, I have really, really had to zero in on this because, man, when I'm upset and I'm verbal, I'm aggressive, and I'm mean, baby. I mean, I'm going after character and personality, and I'm doing it contemptuously. Yeah. Now, I don't know if any of you are like this, you know, when you fight, but this is destructive. Okay, this is out of bounds behavior in any context, according to the scripture. Okay, but also, also just pragmatically. Okay, in relationships. All right, you ready for the third one? We will get constructive here in a second. Gotta hurry. Defensiveness. Okay, now you say, well, wait a second. I mean, you're taking away everything here. And if somebody is coming after your character and personality and they're showing contempt, don't you at least have the right to defend yourself? Right? I mean, it seems very natural, but here's the thing that Gottman found. Defensiveness actually is a very ineffective strategy for resolving conflict. If you're interested in resolving your conflict, when your partner comes at you, even if they're doing it very inappropriately, defensiveness is very ineffective. Let me tell you why. Here's what defensiveness does on an emotional level. Your partner comes at you and says, you know, blah, or whatever it is about what, and you say, no, I'm not the problem, you are. No, I'm not the problem, you are. That's what your defensiveness is really saying. They're trying to make the case, and you basically say, but there's a, you know, let me give you my excuse. Let me tell you why, at some level, it's not my fault, right? And really, the fault is either something over here, but more generally, it's probably you. It's not my fault, it's your fault. So you just become Teflon to your partner is, maybe even inappropriately, they're trying to get something, it matters enough to them, you know, to be bringing this thing, and we're basically going, no, it's not important, or no, it's not my fault. You're the one that really, obviously, if I have a good excuse that doesn't belong to my partner, Deborah, you know, I say, well, you're making too big a deal about this, is really my script. So what I'm basically saying at a subtle level is, you're really an irrational and unstable person who just blows up for really strange reasons. You really should check that out with a psychologist. You know that. So what do you think that does to your partner? Your partner's going, okay, obviously I'm not getting through here. I've got to come back and try this. And this is the insanity of marriage. I'm going to try the precise same thing a little louder or a little harder or a little, I mean, and then you're just like, ah! You know, like, why am I crazy? You know, and you just, this is what happens. So defensiveness is very ineffective because it plays right into the patterns of escalation, of repaying evil for evil, for instance. If your partner, well, let me just tell you the fourth thing here. Fourth horseman that Gottman found, stonewalling. Stonewalling is when one partner eventually begins to tune out emotionally. Okay, this is where the conflict, the whatever, the disconnection has gotten to a level where, you know what, you've decided somewhere that I've been hurt and been down this road so many times that to continue to keep my emotions engaged in this relationship is too painful, and therefore at some level I'm just gonna vacate it. So I mean, go ahead and have your hissy fit, you know, whatever. I mean, my life is not in this, you know. And we can do this, or we're cold as ice, but at least we're still tracking down the road together, at least, you know. But I'm gonna find my fulfillment, you know, some other place. Now, what Gottman found is that the presence of stonewalling was one of the final stages of a marital, that's a marriage that's on its way out, you know, if intervention doesn't happen, because basically, and again, I said this last week, but let me just say it again. Hate, even something, emotion as strong as hate, as toxic as that is, hate is a preferable emotion to have thriving in your relationship than apathy. Hate says, I still care intensely enough about you to expend the emotional energy to hate you. So the next time your partner barfs on you, say, thank you, honey, I didn't know you loved me so much. You know, I mean, honestly, don't say that. That would be sarcastic. But honestly, this week, okay, Deborah and I, and we got to get out of this thing, and this is not healthy. But one of the things that we use to reconnect and heat up our relationship sometimes is fighting. I mean, it's not a very good thing, but at the end of it, I'm just like, I still love this woman. She's driving me insane, but I remember. I mean, anybody that can make me lose my mind like this, you know, is, I still got something for her, you know. And, you know, and I don't, that's, again, I'm not recommending that, but what I'm saying is that even if, don't, some of you are ready to quit on your conflict. Because it's, and you can even do crazy stuff in your head where you go, it's probably more spiritual just not to say it, you know, than to, you know, at least I'm not, well, there's a fine line in there somewhere. I'm not, but what I'm trying to say is, it is not loving. It is not spiritual. It is not Christ-like to abdicate, okay, on your relationship. Do not give way, okay, to apathy. If you find yourself in the middle of a stonewalled relationship, and I find a lot of older couples that have, in other words, they had enough character or whatever it was not to break up, or not to kill each other. And so they just redefine their expectations, and they're kind of just, we're gonna stay married. But emotionally, they are, they're stonewalled out, right? Their investment is not there anymore in that relationship. The energy is elsewhere, okay? And again, I would just refer you back to the first lesson. The heart of God's intent, the gift of why he gave us each other is oneness. Okay, and he wants more. Okay, so those are the marriage killers. All right, four things to sort of check your relationship and to see whether you fall in the parameters here of do we have a style of conflict that is repaying evil for evil. the insult for insult. Now, you say, well, how do you break that crazy cycle? What would be some things that would help us if we're not going to do those things to approach our conflict in a more healthy way? Okay? When is this supposed to be done? 10 minutes? I gotta fly, okay? So I wish I could say more about this. The first thing here is simply this. It's going to sound so simple, you're not even going to write it down, okay? But I'm going to say it. We have got to calm down. We've got to calm down before we engage our conflict. Proverbs 29:11 says this, only a fool gives full vent to his anger. So, I mean, I need to stamp that somewhere. I mean, only a fool gives full vent to his anger. When I approach my conflict, when I am at the height of my emotions, you know, what's going to come out of me tends to be criticism and contempt and, you know, ugliness and, you know, just these kind of things that are destructive. Now, guys, this is particularly, and women, this might be insightful to you. When you hook guys up, this is all human beings, but you hook people up to monitors when they're under intense marital conflict or relational conflict, the blood, all the physical cues on the monitors read like a person is under attack by a saber-toothed tiger. I mean, there's no difference on the monitor biologically between someone who's under extreme life-threatening duress and emotional distress. So heart rate, blood pressure, what happens to your glands, all this stuff. When you're in the middle of it with somebody you care about, that is an intense emotional experience, right? Now, under intense duress, human beings have two primary biological responses. What are they? Okay, now, we talked about pursuer, withdrawer. What's part of what's happening to you is biological. Okay, you are like literally, physically, going to be driven to one of those two responses. Now, the question is, do you want to engage the most important person in your life that you hope to spend a lifetime together of intimacy and closeness while you are ready to either kill or to run for your survival? That's the question. Now, the only alternative to that is if you build into your conflict some period of time to calm down, to let your body... Now, listen, ladies, what they find is that guys elevate faster under stressful situations and calm down more slowly biologically than women, which, by the way, is why I think generally men tend to have learned adaptive responses to their biology to leave. Okay, so in other words, why a guy tends to walk. I mean, a guy is either going to walk out when they're upset or they're going to sock you in the face. Right? Now, socking your wife in the face is a bad idea. We've been told that, you know, and it is. So generally speaking, this kind of response biologically, you know, is probably key to your survival. But now, guys, I gotta keep going. Anyways, we've got to take some time. We gotta take some time to calm down. Okay. Second, if you're gonna calm down though, you've got to come back, guys. Just because your biology has calmed down does not mean the problem's over, idiot. You know, I mean, seriously, I mean, you've got, if your wife is going to trust you or whoever, that's the withdrawer, to give you some space when they're everything in them saying deal with this now, you've got to set a time to come back. If you don't come back, you have betrayed your relationship. Okay, so calm down, but come back. Secondly, remember the point of the argument. Remember the point of the argument. Now, the scripture says in Ephesians 5:28 that he who loves his wife loves himself. We talked about the math of oneness last week. If you're one, can you really ever win an argument where your spouse loses? Doesn't the math say that if you win at the expense of your spouse, you've lost if you're one? So the point of every argument, now here, listen to me because I got to do this to myself. Like, look in the mirror and remember that the point of this argument is not winning this battle. The point of the argument is my partner, is our oneness. In any argument, if you're one, who are you fighting for? Us. right? If you think that winning battles at the expense of your us is the point, you have missed the point. You are fighting yourself, okay? And in any argument, one of the things that will help you as a couple is to realize, what are we fighting for? We're fighting for us. We are actually on the same team. As disparate as our opinions about this are, and as much hurt and pain and intensity and everything that's in play here, really in the big picture of things here, because of what we want in this relationship, we are what we're fighting for, not this thing. That will give you a little distance, right, from, if you can remember that, will give you some distance to address really what is a secondary problem, which is the issue. So you can mobilize together to be on the same team. Let's not fight battles and lose wars, I guess is the point, okay? Third thing is this. After you've calmed down, after you remember the point, I mean, that would be a good thing to do, just like reflexively. We're going to take some time, we're going to get back together and talk about this, and when we get back, the criteria for getting back is to remember the point of the argument, which is us. Okay, that would go a long ways. The third thing is soften your approach. And this is the most incredible thing from Gottman. Proverbs 15:1 says this, a soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words what? They incite anger. Now here's the most incredible thing. When Gottman watched couples that did well in their conflict, this is what he discovered. Well, good and bad, but this is what he discovered. 94%, almost all of the arguments, a conflict that you will ever have with your spouse, 94% of the arguments will end the way they began. Now think about this for a second. That means the first 30 seconds to a minute of your approach to your partner, how you frame what you want to bring up to them, the spirit and the tone, the attitudes, the timing, all of that, has a 94% predictability of where that argument will end. You know what that means to me? That means I better think, pray, get counsel, whatever, not to be on eggshells, but to come in a soft, just soften it. The approach has got to be, you think about this biblically for a second. Having the mind of Christ, having humility, having a sense of your own brokenness and the fact that you are a person who stands every minute under grace, and therefore you've been forgiven, so you are safe, that you are under the care of a father who has got your back. I mean, all those things loosen you up, they soften you, so that you don't come to these arguments with the script that says, if I don't get what I need out of my partner here, everything in my life goes down the toilet. That is too much intensity, right? And if we come with that attitude and in words and ways that reflect that, 94% of the time, we're going to end in a mess because we got to soften our approach, okay? And here's the last thing. Well, there's two last things, but I'll just give you this. All of us are going to screw this up. I mean, because conflict, you just don't have your little sheets here. Okay, these are just so I get that. So cut each other some slack, right, in this. And you know what a win looks like? A win looks like the next time you're in the middle of all this stuff and you realize, whoa, I raced past criticism, contempt, I started to defend, I didn't calm down, we're right back in the middle of our craziness again. You know what an incredible statement is, what it means to live by grace, is the capacity to stop under the leadership of the Holy Spirit and just say, you know what? God has given me some breaks. This relationship does not have to careen incredibly out of control. I can use some breaks because I can't control my partner, but I can take responsibility for myself. I can stop, I can repent, I can say I'm sorry about that. You can say, can we have a do-over? Can we break here and calm down? Remember what we're fighting for. Come back. The first thing, we can repent to each other for how we regret how we just handled that again. and ask for the grace to maybe have a different kind of conversation, to actually listen to each other, those kind of things. If we can just put the principle of saying we're sorry, saying I love you, can we try this again? Okay. In a different way, we will find ourselves getting there more than we're not because of grace. Right? All right. I wish we had tons of time to talk about this. I'm sorry for mismanaging my time. But anybody want to have a last comment, and then I'll close it up.
So I just want to draw it real explicitly what you just said about, I don't remember how you worded it, but you talked about when we remember that we're broken, we're sinners, we're living under grace, that has the power to calm us down, to, we know God's got our back, we know we're children. So really what that is, that's applying the gospel to our own hearts.
Yeah.
So that it empowers us to extend grace and love.
Right.
Right.
I think Christians have the best shot at that. I mean, obviously non-Christians can apply these principles. Gottman's seeing that. But Christians have the greatest place to be able to get out of the crazy cycle of conflict, because we have a resource to go to that gives us a grid for understanding that we understand what it is to be forgiven, what it is to be loved, what it is to be safe, you know, what it is to be sacrificial in the way of Jesus, and to come at our partners out of self, you know, out of other-centeredness rather than, you know, just the needs that we have in ourselves. Okay? Let me pray for you, and we'll be dismissed. God, a lot of stuff here. I pray that you would use some of it to stick and to be helpful. If nothing else, may it start some conversations in our marriages and maybe with each other so that we can apply, learn, and grow towards oneness. In Jesus' name, amen.